Welcome to the Archives of the Loralee Show, conversation for exploration, timeless discussions to challenge and expand our worldview. And while you may find our guests fascinating, the views expressed may not necessarily reflect those of our own or of the Cuyamangue Institute. That's why we call it Conversation for Exploration. And join in our ongoing live events, interviews, our own presentations, and much, much more as we go exploring. Learn more at CuyamangueInstitute.com and Loralee.com. And hello there, I'm Loralee, and thanks for tuning into Conversation for Exploration. Have you ever noticed how people who have led extraordinary lives often have keen insights about life to share with us? And you'll meet one of them tonight. That is Melodoma Somme. He's a spokesman for the Dagara tribe. He lives in three worlds now. The world of his village in Africa, the world of the Dagara ancestors, and the modern Western world. He holds two PhDs from the Sorbonne and Brandeis University. He's taught at the University of Michigan. Yet with all that, he still feels that the traditional initiation into ancestral knowledge that was shared with him in his early youth is his true education. He was in fact told by the elders of his village that the ancestors wanted him to go to the West. And here he is sharing some of those very keen insights with us. Welcome, Melodoma. Tell me what you've been up to and tell me about your early life that led you to be here with us tonight.
Well, my early life was simple by village standard.
Where was this village in Africa, just so we can place it in our minds?
Well, it's called Dano, situated in a country called Burkina Faso. It's a former Abovolter, as the French people used to call it. It's a landlocked country, of course, and the tribe is actually divided into three different nationalities, Ghana, Ivory Coast, and Burkina Faso, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the tribe is divided into about 19 different villages. And in each one of them, of course, life is reduced to its simplest by modern standards. And it's organized around the two seasons of the year. One is called the rainy, the other one is called the dry. During the rainy season, people are busy trying to raise the crop necessary for their survival during the dry season. And during the dry season, they're busy involving themselves in all kinds of community rituals because the earth is no longer tillable.
Uh-huh.
And so in a situation like that, of course...
Kind of like a six-month vacation is what it sounds like, or something to get down to the meaningful part of life.
That's right.
It's a built-in advantage there.
You know, in the West, at most, the normal worker has about a month off during the year. Well, in the village, you got the whole half of the year off. And that gives you plenty of time to look into your spiritual self. Not that during the normal working hours you don't look into your spiritual self, but during that particular time of the dry season, everything is essentially geared toward spiritual education. And so during that time, of course, I was more closer to my grandfather, who was the one that taught me how to wake up into the magical realities that was something into which his whole life was invested. And, of course, that was something extremely influential to my psyche because I carried that energy with me from the time when I was separated from him and later on from the village and my family and so on and so forth until I came back.
Now, was your boyhood special in that you had a father that had some special abilities and special skills and taught them to you, or did every young man growing up in your village receive a similar education as you did?
Well, that is more what it is, what the case is, that every young person does, in indeed qualify for this same kind of specialized relationship. There is a certain relationship between grandparents and grandchildren, which is very key to the general dynamic of a village life. In the village, they say that the grandfather or the grandmother is packing up to join the ancestors. And the grandson or the granddaughter just arrived from the ancestors' land. So as a result, they both share together the proximity with the ancestral land. This is why they spend a lot of time together, because they have to exchange notes somehow.
So, I like the way you put that. I need to take a break, Melodoma.
Okay.
And also, when we come back, if you could explain the significance of the ancestors, obviously in our culture, you know, we have a whole different attitude towards our older generation.
I see, yes.
And so, the only thing I can relate it to is the Shinto of the Japanese, who, again, most of their religion is based around honoring the ancestors. So if you will explain to us that, we'll have a more of a basis to understand your education and some of the very deep significance of it.
Sure.
As we continue our conversation with Melodoma Somei, he's written a book called Ritual, Power Healing and Community, Echoes of the Ancestors. We'll return. I'm Laura Lee. This is the Laura Lee Show. We're talking with Melodoma Somei, African medicine man, about his extraordinary life and the keen insights that he'll be sharing with us. Melodoma, your story about the ancestors packing up to, or your elderly, the grandparents rather, packing up to go visit the ancestors and the newborns, the children, just arriving, reminds me of a story about the 5-year-old boy who went to his newborn baby brother and whispered in his ear, "Tell me about God, you know, remind me about God." It kind of puts a whole new perspective on birth and death and those passages in life.
Well, this is an important point. I've encountered a lot of questions on this issue of the ancestors. And what I would like to say by way of clarification is that one must understand something fundamental about this concept. The ancestors are not entities bearing identities, including names and genealogical location, as is understood here in the West. There is a certain understanding that what is called ancestors is a pool of positive energies that are healthily influencing the entire village dynamics.
Hmm.
And whether you're bad or good, any passage from this life to the other means that you have to go to the land of the ancestors and account for something. Now, those who have, for instance, lived rather an ethical life, do find themselves being compelled by the ancestors to engage in a project of restoration or healing that will involve, of course, certain human beings in the village. And so they will use spiritual channels to log on to someone in the village in order for certain rituals to be done, so that which he or she did while alive in the village, that sort of put his or her access to the ancestral land in jeopardy, can be cleared.
Well, it reminds me of a Shakespeare play where Shakespeare opens a play and something's gone awry. Nature's a little bit off kilter and the crops don't grow and the sun doesn't shine and something's just a little bit off. And the hero's journey then becomes the protagonist, the couple, usually it's a man and woman or man that has to go out and figure out what's wrong and then right it through some deed. So it's that same general kind of dynamic that you're describing?
Absolutely. That's absolutely what it is. A lot of the time, people unusual or rather eccentric behaviors in the village are primarily approached as signal that maybe a departed person or a person about to depart is trying to connect with that person because that person has the ability to join together in a healing project that may end up being pretty beneficial to the departed one. One of the things, of course, that I notice here, much to my displeasure, is the fact that if such a concept is applicable at a universal level, what we realize is that the kind of modern approach that we have to the dead is probably influencing their particular type of life rhythm that we observe in modern societies. That the challenges, the turmoil, all these unsolvable problems may come from a dysfunctional relationship between the living and the dead, and between those who are here and the ancestral land.
Gosh, that's a new thought, isn't it? Well, one thing that has been much commented on is the way that our older generation faces death, you know, hooked up to a lot of machines and painfully, you know, trying to extend a few more months of life. And there's a big movement afoot now to die in a spiritual way. If you know that you're at the end of a long and rich life, why not die with a little more dignity and a little more grace?
A little more grace.
And consciously, I guess, accept the process and the passing over. So there's a big movement afoot to kind of get back to that kind of spiritual sense, not only of living, but of dying.
Of course. There is, and it seems to me to be a very, very important need here for a reconnection with a dignified death, a form of death that is ritualized and eventually does qualify the dead eventually to join the ancestral land.
Not only is there an effort to reconnect with the spiritualism of death, but of life. I was talking with a doctor who was saying that he was lecturing to three Boston medical schools about spirituality to these med students, and they were loving it. They were all saying, this is what we were missing in becoming doctors. So there's much to do about getting it back first in life, too. We'll be back with Melanoma Somei. I'm Laura Lee. Melanoma, you know, it's easy for us to look at a continent and all the collection of peoples making up that culture and assume that each piece is pretty much identical to the next. But on closer look, for example, with Native Americans in this country, we find that really the Native Americans are comprised of many tribes, each with different customs, dress, tools, language. I would be assuming the same is true of Africa, and that your tribe, the Dogara, had their own way of life and some common to the rest of their neighbors in the whole of Africa, but some different.
Yes, the ethnic differences must be emphasized as far as Africa is concerned, because it is also a linguistic defining line. Because usually the name given to the tribe is also the language that the tribe speaks.
Okay.
This is because language, as it is spoken in any ethnic group in Africa, is a defining principle for the kind of cosmology that the group of people who speak that language are living by.
Huh.
And I think that Dogara people fit pretty well into this this kind of category. The language is constructed essentially to encompass this kind of worldview that they have. It's usually, for instance, in Burkina Faso, there is an outfit that one wears that tells one about one's own ethnical affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, here your ID tells you where you are, who you are.
Right.
In Africa, it's still common that what you wear is revealing as to where you come from.
The idea of uniform.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell me about the cosmology of the Dogara people a little bit more. You've explained a bit about ancestors. How else do they see the world?
Well, they see the world as, of course, a universe that is formed by five essential elements that they refer to as fire, water, earth, nature, and mineral. Fire is the most ancient element and the universe prior to becoming what it is, seen by the Dogara as a fire. It was met by water, and as a result, it produced a kind of solidification that made it possible for the particular life form that we now know to come to exist. So this is why earth is a third element. Earth was born out of the encounter between fire and water. And so the fourth element then becomes nature, and the last element, of course, is mineral.
Nature would be the plants and the biology.
Yeah, that's right.
Animals.
Vegetal, indeed. Mm-hmm. Now, each one of these elements carries a very important function. And by the way, every person is supposed to embody all five of the elements. And they must be there under a certain kind of distribution in order to work.
Oh, balance. Well, the Chinese would have a similar system. You know, I'm wondering, and here in the West, we would think of the fire, the Big Bang, you know, where everything was really hot and moving.
Uh-huh.
And by chemistry, then water kind of forms hydrogen, oxygen together, and from there, you know, water, and from there, life. And I wonder if we have a similar thought in our perspective. We'll be back with Melodoma Somme. I'm Laura Lee. Hi, we're back. Laura Lee here with Melodoma Somme, author of Ritual, Power, Healing, and Community. Melodoma is also teaching with such leaders of the men's movement as Robert Bly and Michael Mead. Melodoma, you're telling us a bit more about the cosmology of the Dogara people.
Yes, I was saying that the five elements, fire, water, earth, mineral, nature that I mentioned, are embodied by every person. And every life form that comes into the universe originate from one of the five elements. People's characters are also defined by these elements. For instance, there are people who are called the fire keepers, and usually these people are the dreamers. They are more in contact with the dream world than anybody else. They're very psychically tuned. They're intuition and instinct is a lot more aware or awake than the ordinary person's intuition. So they are looked at as the tribal eye into the future, into the unknown, so forth. Then you have those that call the water keepers, who are usually the village counselors, the village teachers, those that create a space within which people can reconcile themselves with something they're in conflict with. And then the earth keepers are usually nurturers, caretakers, home builders, providers of comfort. Finally, the nature people are usually associated with magic, those who are able to decipher the complex language of the plants, the trees, anything that is green. And finally, the mineral keeper is a person who has access and knows how to listen to what they call the stone or the rock. Because the stone is to the Dogara people what a computer chip is to the modern world. It stores information. And there's a way to retrieve that information. And so the mineral keepers are the ones that are able to do that.
And which are you, Melodoma?
I'm a part of the water keepers. So,
of course, because you teach and you counsel and you...
That's right.
I should have guessed. Gosh, this thought of stored information, I mean, I can understand that with a crystal.
Uh-huh.
But we're talking about just everyday old pebbles?
Well,
you know,
every piece of stone is a receptor. that is specialized at accumulating certain types of information. Now, you should understand that not every stone is ready to take in any kind of information.
Uh-huh.
This is why there's so many different types of stones.
Huh. Interesting thought.
And the reason why stones are utilized for healing is because the nature of the information that a particular stone has may be able to interface with the information that our body emits.
Okay, we're back to vibrations and that quantum reality.
That's right.
Well, I would then guess that the Dogara people at some basic fundamental level would understand the quantum viewpoint of reality as being expressed by quantum physics much more aligned to that than they would be to Newtonian physics.
Well,
or at least equally recognizing the two.
That's a possibility, indeed. If it could be put in their own terms.
That's what I'm saying. I only know that to express it that way. And we'll be back with Melodoma Somme. I'm Laura Lee. I'm Laura Lee. We're talking with Melodoma Somme, S-O-M-E, author of Ritual, Power, Healing, and Community, Echoes of the Ancestors. You actually tour the world and tour the country, holding men's conferences and counseling and teaching Melodoma, I understand, as well as writing. You keep up a pretty busy pace.
Well, that's correct, yeah.
And what are your your PhDs in? What were you studying in?
My first degree was in political science, and the second one was in literature.
Oh, that's a good basis. And
right.
You were explaining some of the I guess, education that your tribal village imparted to you. How did your ancestors tell you, and ancestors being that kind of collective pool of wisdom, how did they tell you that you should go to the West and teach? What was that synchronistic event like for you?
Well, one of the key things that people must understand about this thing is that usually a person is identified, or a soul, so to speak, is identified long before that soul takes on a definite human body. So, for instance, during pregnancy, people are interested in the identity of the soul who is on its way to Earth. There is a specific ritual that is aimed at getting from the incoming soul these useful information so that the living, those who are already here, can begin the kind of preparatory work that will make the space available for the person to be born. And so we call that a ritual hearing, where the soul of the person coming takes the voice of the mother and start to answer all questions that elders have about its identity, its purpose, and what kind of assistance it would need in this human journey in order to be able to fulfill that purpose. So that's how I found out about myself. When I was born, my grandfather was telling me about all these things that I told him while I was still in my mother's womb.
Oh, I have a personal story to relate that you finally are offering an explanation for this girlfriend's story. She said that she was pregnant and she was just sitting in bed one night, and she was feeling very sad and lonely because her husband was on a long business trip and she was missing him and wanting him to come back. So she was feeling sad. And she said all of a sudden she felt this soul, this being comforting her.
Yeah.
And just offering her solace. And then she had this crazy thought that it was the soul of her yet unborn child that was doing the comforting. She said for some reason she had this intuitive understanding that this is who it was. And I'm going to have to call her up and tell her this, because now it's offering an understanding for this.
Oh.
She just thought she was kind of crazy, and it was a beautiful experience, and she just leaves it at that, but she never had a framework for it.
Oh, yeah.
But is this the kind of experience you're talking about?
That's exactly what it is. Because the incoming soul is constantly in communication with the mother. And it is not just the mother who is capable of hearing the information constantly being communicated. There are ways of tapping into the particular channel in which the soul communicates. And that's what the elders utilize in order to get the information they need to prepare the space necessary for the incoming person to begin his or her life journey.
You're talking about a very interactive universe here, aren't you?
Well, that's definitely true. Of course, it is based on this important assumption that life does not start and end right here on this side. That is it's a complete cycle of things. And so you have to realize that in order to exist in this world, from the point of view of the elders in the village, you have to be in the particular form we're in that makes us being referred to as humans. You have to have bones and flesh. In order to exist...
Kind of the 3D apparatus, right?
That's
kind
right.
Kind of like the suit we wear to...
That's right. We don't need this kind of suit on the other side. It's considered too heavy and too cumbersome. And so this is why when we go there, we just leave the suit behind us. I mean, who wants it?
Okay, so now you're also providing a framework to understand people's near-death experiences.
Ah, that's interesting, because what happened is that just as we take clothes off, when we take a shower, when we are leaving for the other world, we just take the body off. We can see it. We can notice it. But we see it as us.
Okay, so if Wilder Penfield, this famous brain surgeon, after over 2,000 open brain surgeries, concluded that the mind was not contained in the brain, that the mind was an energy field that went all over the body, then you're also saying, well, this mind energy field can be independent of the body.
Oh, yeah, pretty independent of the body. And that's a real puzzle thing. That's a very puzzling thing. Look, in the village, for instance, when someone is going to die, 3 days ahead of time, those who are called the seer can see that person walking around in the village, redoing everything that that person used to like doing.
And so, like one last visit to these
last visit to those key places that used to be part of the life apparatus of the person. And so when you see that person, then you realize that the body behind is a very sick body. Or the person at home is pretty sick. And so...
They're packing their bags to go, as you were saying.
Yeah, they're packing their bag to go. And so they're saying their goodbye. So they go everywhere and they say goodbye to people. So only certain individual in the village are prepared ritualistically to see these disembodied souls.
So when we come back, if you would explain a little bit about ritual and why it's important, why your whole tribal life tends to revolve around ritual, must be providing access to the meaning of life, a reminder of the meaning. It must be participating in a conscious way in this worldview that the Dogara hold, that would be my guess. And we'll continue our conversation with Maladoma Somme. And I also want to know, Maladoma, how your ancestors, as you said, told you to go to the West. And you must be completing your mission, which is helping remind us who are kind of lost from our traditions that have gone on before all of humanity for thousands and thousands of years, reminding us, I guess, to add back that spiritual component to life. It's interesting that the furthest reaches of science are now providing an intellectual framework, at least. We'll be back with Maladoma Somme. I'm Laura Lee. Maladoma, a little bit about ritual, if you will. You've written a whole book about it.
Well, it was just a few thoughts jotted down in order to at least alert any person who has some kind of spiritual longing about what the Dogara people see in this whole practice. Ritual, indeed, is the core of the tribal life. the village life and the family life. And this is because ritual is the best, most effective way to stay not only in connection with the spirit world, but also to make sure that things in this world do function according to each and everybody's life purpose.
What gift could we learn from the ritual of the Dogara people that we could bring to the West? One hesitation I have is that in the West we have so many various different groups and historical references and different religions all with their own ritual, different ethnic groups all with their own ritual about every daily aspect of life. And people, I think, you know, it can lead to religious war and conflict if you're not careful. My ritual is the only ritual. Mine's the only truth. My God's the only God. You know, whereas I think what we need to learn is to respect all and find the commonality so that we can all get along and all honor one another's religions and rituals and customs and languages and ways of conducting life.
Well, you're
Could
right
you speak
about
to that?
That. You know, the tendency is a polarization and a conflictualization of beliefs, when in fact there is definitely a possibility of universalizing the whole concept of ritual. My understanding is that the kind of ritual practices that become aware of in the Western world, especially through Christianity, are not really to be looked at from that standpoint. They're more like ceremonial practices devoid of the kind of depth that I can see in village and tribal rituals.
And was it from your perspective, or on what basis do you say that?
Well, from my perspective, because I was brought up as a Catholic.
Ah.
And there are tremendous rituals that the Christian world, starting with the Mass to everything else, there's a tremendous ritual ingredient in what is called the Catholic liturgy. And so my personal experience is that it does not have the kind of depth that makes them really a ritual. But still, I think that there is need here, not so much to get people out of something, kind of practice that is doing them some kind of good already. It is important, and that's where I come in, to offer to people who are seeking alternative ways to enrich their lives, to look into the kind of ritual that the Dogara people are offering.
You know,
it's not a replacement ritual, but it is something made available for those wants.
And it seems to me that every society, every culture, every person has some gift to offer from their own experiences, their own unique ways of life, that they're there for a purpose, that there's always some wisdom ingrained.
That's very true.
In every culture. And for heaven's sakes, we are living in an information age where we can actually learn from you, Maladoma, and we can learn from the Aborigines, and we can learn from all the various cultures on the earth. I mean, it's all available to us now, and it must be for a reason. I don't think God, you know, rolls the dice without there being a purpose to it. And so, you know, I think maybe that we are living in such chaotic times that maybe it needs the collective wisdom of humanity over the millennia that we've been here to offer up a vision for solutions for the future. And maybe part of it is that harmony, that, you know, tying together of all the various threads of human existence.
Now, you're very perceptive, Laura. What I see is pretty much the same thing. I see that this is a stew that is cooking.
A stew, yeah.
That is going to be the kind of dish that will be served to the world society in the next millennium.
Oh, that's beautiful. So we can all find ourselves in it and all find each other in it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so in order for that to happen, every piece of ingredient has to be thrown in. Every ingredient that was hidden somewhere in the vast cosmos has to be found and brought in, because it would add to the taste of the whole stew.
Make it that much more rich and delicious and spicy.
And spicy.
And we'll return with Melodoma Somme. I'm Laura Lee. We have a couple more minutes to spend with Melodoma Somme. Melodoma, you teach in the men's movement. You're a leader in the men's movement. Put it in perspective for me, the men's movement and the women's movement. What are each trying to accomplish, and where do you see men and women in relationships coming together in the near future?
First, kind of men's conferences that I go to, not really what they like to call the men's movement. But basically, recently, what I've been mostly doing with my wife has been doing workshops and seminars for men and women. And one of the things that I've noticed is that it brings out what I call the indigenous self, that is really beautiful to see. And, of course, judging by the tremendous influence that the work our work has and the people that come to us to it, we've noticed that it is a very powerful and beautiful place for true gender encounter and reconciliation. So that's something that at least we like to do as a personal thing. But in the men's gathering, most of the time, what I've noticed is that there is indeed an extremely confused self within the male that is seeking a place of empowerment, a place of better understanding of maleness, and essentially some deep longing for initiation, true initiation, that is. And so, you know, being an initiated person from my tribe, all I can do is to present initiation from the perspective that I have personally experienced it, and bring indeed the indigenous village wisdom and culture to these men, who are seeking an indigenous model to try to tap into their own indigenous self.
Oh, when you feel that longing, you go to the people who know how to access it.
Well, yeah.
And you don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that if there's any movement at all that exists, it's a kind of movement toward nailing down the true identity that male and female carry within themselves in this culture, and are looking or searching for an adequate model to resurrect and to make it live as an empowering means of life.
Boy, that was beautifully expressed, and that explained a lot. Thank you for that. Thank you for the hour.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And thank you for some of the keen insights that you've shared with us tonight, and what an interesting life that you're living. That was Melodoma Somme, again, author of Ritual, Power, Healing, and Community. This has been Conversation for Exploration, and I want to thank you for joining us on our tour around the universe at large here tonight. And join us next time. I'm Laura Lee.